Welcome to the Military Child Education Coalition podcast, the show that highlights a wide range of challenges and triumphs that our military-connected kids experience. My name is Nikki Harrison, and I'll be your host today. We would like to say thank you for the support of the Military and Civilian Spouses Club of Fort Irwin for this episode. I am so excited to have joining me two special guests on this podcast today, and I am really honored, actually, to have them chatting with me and would love for them to start by just introducing themselves. And Rachel, maybe you could go first and then McKenna.
Sure. My name is Rachel Guernsey. A lot of different hats that I wear, but my primary hats are I'm married to a wonderful man named Adam, who is retired from the military. He's medically retired. I am a mom. I have four children at home, ranging in the ages from 15 all the way down to 5. And then as a job, I work as a licensed marriage and family therapist and licensed clinical professional counselor. But those are my primary hats that I wear. There's lots of other hats that I wear as well, but that's kind of who I am in a real small nutshell.
Okay, so my name is McKenna Guernsey, my mom Rachel, and my dad Adam, and then I have three siblings. I'm the second oldest in them. I have an older brother Blake, a younger sister Madison, and a younger brother Brigham. The only hats I wear are being the oldest girl to the kids, and I like to play cello, and I play basketball, volleyball, and yeah.
Track.
Oh, and track, yeah. Long jump.
In school.
I love my mom's picking in there, and like there's some extra things. Okay, so one thing I didn't know is the cello. Very cool. Very cool. And track. And let me just throw in, my youngest just started doing track and he also does the long jump.
Yes. So
I know, right? So very good. Cool.
Well, yeah. I'm not sure. And this, I would say, is even a bigger hat than most of the other things, is she sings nonstop. So she sings a lot. In choir.
Yeah, I'm in choir. But fun fact, I actually got put. So I was playing cello last year, and I was kind of in like the lower group for cello, well, in an orchestra. And then this year I got put into the honors orchestra, but they were also going to put me in the honors choir. But apparently because they clashed at the same time, I couldn't be in both. So.
So you ended up doing the honors of orchestra and then the every other day choir.
Yeah, that's right. That's the honors choir.
I think that's neat. You've got a lot that you're doing, that you're going on, and hats that you're wearing. So very, very cool. So, well, we wanted to talk with you, McKenna, and Mom. We know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's such an important month to raise awareness on mental health, for us to talk about it and really normalize talking about it, especially as a family. And so I'd love, Rachel, for you to talk about, why do you think it's important to talk about mental health? And also, as a marriage and family therapist yourself, do you find it harder to have the conversations with your own family?
So in general, I would say one of the main reasons why it's important to talk about it is because it's there whether you talk about it or not. Like mental health concerns, it's really interesting because right now when I do intakes with people, I always have to ask for family history, right? And one of those family histories we ask for is there any mental health struggles in your family history? Well, when you talk to the people who are more in like their 50s and younger, oftentimes that little bit older age group, they're like, well, I think my parents kind of had this, but they were never diagnosed. Or my grandparents had this, but they were never diagnosed. When you get down to where you're looking at more like the lower 30s and on down, they actually have diagnoses. They were diagnosed as this. And as a mental health provider myself, having that real actual diagnosis is much more helpful for me. So the older generations where they didn't talk about it, where it wasn't something that was accepted as an okay thing to experience, there wasn't that stigma around that mental health field, they didn't talk about it kind of at all. Right? But it was still there. It still existed, all those things. And so now you have their children are saying, well, we didn't really know what we were dealing with. We didn't understand what was going on. But now having more life experience as an adult, I can understand like it looks like anxiety or it looks like depression or PTSD or whatever it might be. And then you get lower, you have that younger age who have had these diagnoses and understand what it means. they can have a little bit more understanding of when they're dealing with family members who have that struggle. That doesn't make it easy to deal with overall. It doesn't mean it's not hard. It just makes it a little bit easier to understand and sometimes not take it as personally. When you understand that this isn't necessarily directed at you because of who you are, it's being directed at you because the other person's struggling right now and they don't know where else to put it. Right? And so that's one of the reasons why talking about it can make such a huge impact, because it means people are able to have a better, clearer picture about what's going on. And then as far as our family goes, I don't know that it's necessarily easier or harder. I think I just naturally talk about it more because it's kind of like everyone talks about their profession a little bit at home. And there is a lot of talk about mental health things these days. I think it's still, like, at some point, just kind of overused and not truly understood. And so we talk about that a lot, too, how you can't use a diagnosis or a mental health struggle as an excuse. I always use the phrase of understanding mental health is understand isn't like an explanation and not an excuse. So having an explanation of what mental health struggles are there and how they can lead people to act in certain ways can help us understand why they got to that point, but it doesn't excuse any actions that they took up to that point. And so we use that a lot when we're talking about the family. Like, okay, with my family, you know, the kids kind of know what depression is. They know what anxiety is. They know some of those basic terms. And, you know, with my husband having PTSD, and he's had some depression in the past to go along with that, is that I talk to the kids about that pretty frequently. And I have to remind them, hey, remember, this is one of the things daddy's struggling, you know, he's struggling with some of these things. And right now his reactions are not great, but we just have to kind of just remember that this is one of those difficult things that we have to deal with. And again, it doesn't necessarily excuse it, but it helps understand a little bit.
I like what you said at the very beginning, that whether you talk about it or not, it's there. And I think that was very powerful when you said that. I actually got goosebumps because open communication is fantastic. If you're in a family that maybe that's a little bit of a struggle, I mean, it's still there, you know, whether you talk about it or not. And as someone who is a military child, something I just honestly thought about when you said is my dad is a Vietnam vet. And growing up, I didn't understand a lot of what that meant and the impact that it had on his mental health and things, behaviors that he had or things that he did that we didn't understand, my brother and I, that, you know, fast forward 20, 30 years and I get it, right?
That's a retrospection, right?
Yes, because it wasn't just something that we talked about in my family when I was growing up. And that was, you know, a long time ago. And so you're right. Like, it's just, it's there whether you're talking about it or not. So I think that's important that you really highlight that. Over the past few years, we've been shining a light on those that are part of military and or veteran caregiving families and how we can best support them. And I love that we are doing this now. Like, we're talking about the kids and the spouses and anyone that's part of these families and really talking about that. I'd love to know, do you identify as a caregiving family? And if you do, what impact has it had on your day-to-day life?
So I would say that I would classify us as a caregiving family. I don't know if the kids would do the same. Because all they've ever known is my husband post-war. You know, they didn't know him before they were born after he came home. So this is all they'd known. So I don't know if they consider that caregiving or not on their part, but I can definitely see the roles that they play within that as well. Like I said, we talk about things, you know, we have to recognize, hey, dad needs his time away, right? He needs some time just to be, don't bug him, give him his space. There's other times when you know, he's more outgoing and fun and you know, he's the fun parent a lot of times, but you know, he does like to get out and he likes to be active with the kids. He doesn't do a whole lot of going out by himself. That's not he's not comfortable with that a lot of times. And so oftentimes, you know, I'm pretty busy through work and the different hats, and so he oftentimes will grab a kid to go with him because he doesn't really like to go by himself. So for them, I think it's just, they're just going out, ooh, dad's going to take me out. And we get to get a snack or we get to get a toy or whatever it is. But from my standpoint, I see how that is actually caregiving. So they're filling that role that I, as a spouse in that moment, for whatever reason, can't do. And so there's lots of moments like that I think everyone comes together and really fills some of those spaces for us.
Yeah, I like to fill in for breakfast before school. Not because I don't like, not because I like trying to skip any periods, but like Wheat Montana.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
I like that you said that the kids may not see themselves in the roles. And I think that's what's been so interesting about talking about military and veteran caregiving families and the roles that whether kids play or spouses or whomever it may be is, you know, not knowing that you're in that role and you are, you know, like it's just something that I think we didn't really talk about within the military community as much until the past few years. And so I think that's interesting that, you know, the kids just know what they know and they don't know anything different because that's just what they've been used to doing. The Elizabeth Dole Foundation talks about those that are considered hidden helpers. These are children, youth, and young adults who are impacted or involved in the mental, emotional, or physical care of a wounded or ill service member or veteran. So, McKenna, I'd love to know, how do you think we can better support youth that are in these roles? And how do you feel about being in one of these roles?
Yeah, so for the kids who are in hidden helpers and stuff like that, we can help them, I guess, by telling them, like, yeah, like, there's going to be stuff that's going to happen, and you just kind of got to, like, work through it, I guess, because if your dad or your mom or whoever was in the military is going to, like, have outbursts, and because, like, if they're sleeping and they have dreams of what they've gone through, they can, and they'll wake up all like they're kind of having a panic attack, or they'll just be like, you can just tell, like, because you can tell the difference of the days that they're having that are good and not so good, you know? You can just go over them and be like, it's okay, I got it. Like, you can just go chillax and I'll watch the younger kids or something like that. But for me, I guess it would be whenever my dad, like, has those outbursts, you just kind of gotta, like, just sit there and just kind of let it happen, I guess. And then after he's done with the fact of it, like, it's over with, I like to go sit with him and, like, watch a movie, make some popcorn, watch a movie with him. And I like to, afterwards, if I had my license or my driver's permit, I would drive him. We like to go to Walmart, just go look at the clearance section because hidden treasure is in there. Or we'll go to, our favorite breakfast spot is Wheat Montana. So we get the turkey sandwich with sprouts on it. But sprouts are iffy. It's a day-to-day basis on sprouts, but that wasn't the question, sorry. We'll go there and we'll, like, just talk. We'll talk about, like, our day. I'll talk about school, talk about kids at school, talk about, you know, all the good stuff. And then we'll go home, chillax, or I'll get dropped off at school, which is really boring. But then after I get home from school, he'll pick me up from track or whatever practice I have. We'll, like, stop on the way at the gas station and pick up something. Like, those are, like, the small little moments that, like, make everything really happen, I guess. In those moments, those are, like, those are the times you think to yourself, is this what it would be like if he didn't have PTSD and stuff like that?
So I guess I would ask a question, McKenna, is, like, those bad moments are there, they happen. Would you say that the way that you guys as kids get around them is find ways to connect outside of those moments?
Yeah.
In little ways, even that. It doesn't have to be any big gesture.
Yeah, like going over to him, just like giving him a hug. That's like probably, it might seem like nothing, but to him, it's probably like the biggest thing that made him calm down. For me, I don't really know, but.
So like as a caregiver, there's lots of little things that you do to help take care of your dad. But as a kid, there's also lots of little things that you can do to connect with him.
Yeah.
Like, and it's important to do both.
Like, you can just kind of take your, like, kidness and kind of, like, try and push it onto him. So he goes from being all adulty and serious and kind of loosen up. Like, go back to being a kid for, like, 5 seconds. Yeah.
I really love that. I think there's a lot of good of what you said about finding the little moments to connect. They don't always have to be the big moments. Finding the coping kind of strategies or mechanisms that work. I love that you have your own little breakfast spot that you go to with dad, that you all kind of, it's like your thing. And I just think that's really important for other kids that are in these roles that are at home, whether it's mom, dad, you know, could be grandparents too, that they're, you know, some kids are living with. And so finding those little things. It's funny when you were talking, I was thinking about as a kid, one of the things that my mom used to tell us is we didn't go out to eat a lot as kids or as a family. You know, back then it wasn't a whole lot of eating out. But when we did, you know, my dad has to sit in a certain place at the table. And no matter where we go, he has to be positioned in a certain way. And so we, without us knowing what that meant as kids, we grew up knowing like, oh, this is, we knew, go somewhere, this is dad's seat, this is where dad will sit. Now, many years later, my dad, we're now all adult kids, we go out to eat as family, we know exactly where my dad sits. You know what I mean? Like, we know, oh, this will be dad's seat. I just like that you find those moments to connect and you have those strategies that you use with your dad just to kind of make everything, you know, feel better and more comfortable for him. So Rachel, I know that you are a therapist in the profession. We talked about that a little bit earlier and you had mentioned that. And so you probably have access to so many resources or you have the knowledge and the education. Is there any specific resource that you've used, though, to help your family?
For sure. And honestly, there's no like magical resource that's going to work for everybody. I wish there were. There's not even a magical one that works for us all the time, right? Like, we definitely have some rough moments that we go through. But I think for me, just having my background and my knowledge and my experience working with veterans and with grief and loss and with anxiety and depression and all the other things that people struggle with that I work with. I think for me, having had that experience has helped me personally as the caregiver along the way, because most of the time, not all the time, I will definitely say I don't wear my therapist knowledge hat on all the time. Sometimes I'm just a really frustrated spouse, but I think a lot of times I'm able to recognize what's going on. And I oftentimes will just point it out to him very directly. And I will say something like, hey, you're being mean right now. And that's kind of like our catchphrase for check yourself and see, is your reaction appropriate for the experience we just experienced, for what was just said or what was just done. And he's gotten a lot better. He and I have created, as the husband and wife, kind of those, hey, how are we going to address this when it comes up? Because sometimes when you're in public and things happen, usually he's gotten a lot better over the years. There's not as many moments in public. But, you know, when you're home and everyone's more a little more relaxed, he lets go a little bit more. It's a different setting. And so his guards aren't always up as much, I guess. And that's how it should be, right? Not that you want people lashing out at home, but you want them to feel comfortable at home so that they don't have their guards up all the time. Because that's part of what, especially with PTSD, is that they're on guard 24/7. And so at home, if we can get him to where he's not on guard 24/7 and has some relaxed time, that's okay. And yes, maybe because of that, we have a little bit bigger blowups from time to time, but they've gotten fewer, right? And farther between from when what they used to be. And so we still count it as a win. But I think for me, just having, like, he and I as a spouse have worked at creating, hey, how are you going to let me know if this is a more what you see as a PTSD reaction versus just a normal, we got teenagers and toddlers. like, how is this reaction going to be, right? And so he and I have created that kind of open space. Now, is he always 100% receptive to it? No. Just like none of us, you know that quintessential telling a woman to calm down is not the best option. Right? Like I said, it doesn't always work 100% of the time, but it works enough, I think, that it's been a huge coping skill for us as a partnership. And again, teaching the kids. There's a book that we got very early on. I think the kids were in, the oldest was like
the lion.
Five. Yeah, the lion book. I can't even remember what it's called at this moment. The premise behind it, and maybe you could look it up and get the title for people, but it's basically the story of a daddy lion who has this flame inside him all the time. And there's like a baby, you know, a little toddler lion and a mommy lion. Yeah. And as this family goes through the book, they have the moments where daddy's flame all of a sudden just gets a lot bigger. When the kids were younger, we used that book. And I think it was really helpful because they don't understand the concept of PTSD. They don't understand some of those things that the older kids can understand now. They understand what a flame does or what a fire does. And so that book was really helpful when they were little and helping them understand just some basics and then teaching them about the idea that
I think it was called Why Is Daddy Always Angry? Why Is Daddy Always Mad?
I think that's what it is called. Yeah. But it's a really good book. And it kind of lays out PTSD in a very understandable way for younger kids. But then giving them the idea that when he has these, it's not because you were a bad kid. It's not because of the choices that you made. So you build milk, right? That doesn't necessarily mean that you're a horrible kid. And the eruption that the lion daddy had was all your fault. It just means that you're a kid and had an accident. So that, I think, was really helpful for us. And then there's been organizations that have been really, really helpful for us. Our local Wounded Warrior, so we're up in Montana is where we're based. And our Montana Wounded Warrior program has been really helpful as far as just having events and things. We don't get to go to many because Montana is so big and widespread that sometimes the events are, you know, a couple hours away and that's just not feasible in our schedule. But they have had somewhere, it's more like a retreat for my husband and I. We got to go on a couple's retreat where we were doing whitewater rafting and fly fishing. And it was just super fun. We enjoyed it. I like the outdoors. He likes the outdoors. So it really helped with that. Also, the Wounded Warrior Project has been really great for us. We haven't done as much in the last few years as we had done earlier on. And I think part of that's because we just hadn't needed it as much recently. But that was really helpful. And I think it's more of like those moments where we can kind of step out of just our regular life and have even like 3 or 4 days to be in a hey, we don't have to care about anything that's at home right now. Whether it's the kids who we had grandparents, if we're doing like a couples retreat and we had other families stepping in and helping the kids out, or if it was the whole family getting to participate, we like those a lot because obviously, you know, the kids get to learn and things as well. And then those are things as a family we could talk about ongoing as well. I know things like that have been really helpful for us, those organizations. And they do have a lot of resources available to even online just to look at. We've been able to meet and make friendships with people from those different events that we met, who we've continued to have connections and relationships with, even if they're not local, that we can, you know, kind of be like, they're having another day. Let's hear what's going on here. Oh, yeah, this happened now. So we have those, and the guys get together and do, in our groups, it's primarily the men that have been the military service member, and you know, the wives have not in most cases. There's a couple of different mix-ups of that, but for the most part, that's kind of the arrangement of most of those families. And so it's been helpful having those connections because there's things that we go through as spouses that the children don't see. And I don't want my children to see that. I don't want to bring that to them. And so we bring it to a place where it's understood without even necessarily have to spelling everything out. So that's been really helpful about building that community.
So it sounds like a lot of resources. We love the Wounded Warrior Project as well. Fantastic resources that you're able to get together, connect with others that have a similar lived experience. I think that's important. And so many resources out there. And while you were talking about the book, I had not heard of that book. And so I just did a quick search. And it's Why Is Dad So Mad? And it's by Seth Castle. And on the front, it's got like the lions on it that you're talking about. And so we'll put that in the show notes. And it specifically says it's a story for children in military families whose father battles with combat-related post-traumatic stress disorder. And so great book. We'll put it in the show notes. And I might need to put it in my library collection, something good for our listeners that are living this experience right now in their family.
And I think they do even have a Why Is Mom So Mad too. So they have both versions, I believe.
Okay. So we'll put those in the show notes. We'll make sure that we get those in our resources section. So thanks for sharing those. I think that's always good. Books are a great way to kind of open up communication. So McKenna, you won the 2023 Call for the Arts contest for your art piece, The Tale of Two Lives. And this art piece is a portrait of your dad, and it's beautiful. And it shows half of himself in uniform, and it has the other half of him as a civilian. I love that you did it and kind of it's in black and white and use some gray shading in there. I'd love for you to talk about if art plays a role in how you process your feelings as well as telling stories.
The portrait I did was 2 weeks before the actual submission of your artwork. I had wanted to do it because I was like, I'm technically a military child because my dad was in the military, so I could do it. And in like a portrait form, I wanted to kind of like put my dad's whole entire life experience into one picture with him. I took what he went through, so the part where he was in uniform, and in the background, I took like a battleground going on behind it. So that was kind of like his past memory I was trying to present. And then on the other side is him in the civilian outfit, and he's got the fireworks going on behind him, kind of as he's in like a different setting than what he was in the beginning. And then he still has to deal with that stuff. The fireworks, I guess, are just like the patriotic scene stuff and how he still has to fight with all that trauma and all that pain and all that, like what he had to, I guess, do while he was fighting or in war. And he just had to move on from going through all that to becoming a father and live a civilian life with all that in the back of his head, constantly running. I have a diary. One of my main things I like to do in my diary is like draw little doodles because I don't like writing essays or little stories. So I draw it out. I like to draw out my feelings. So, like, I still have the one when I was really, really little, from when I was like 8, 9. Well, I was looking through it not too long ago, actually, because I was cleaning my room. And I found one of my little doodles that had no words on it. For some reason, or somehow, I knew exactly what it was. Like, I knew exactly what was happening in that picture. It was like me sitting there behind a door, and it was like my dad that was all angry, like a little angry stick man figure. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's when my dad was having those outbursts. But I like remember that happening. So it's just kind of a story through a picture that I'd remembered. So I feel like a lot of people do that with their art. Like my grandpa, he was a Vietnam veteran. He has an art studio. He's a professional artist. And he has got a lot of military art of his combat planes and his Vietnam brothers and what it's called, his group that he was with. Whatever that one group is called when that's everybody together. He's got a picture of that in his bedroom. There's these photos of him when he was younger that are black and white. And there's one with a big C-130 in the background. And his whole unit was sitting on the plane. And there he is with all his buddies. And I think he keeps it there to remember those that he's fought through. Like, those are the people that he knows that if he put his life in their hands, he knew that he'd be perfectly fine. Of course, he would trust those people with his life, considering he put his life on the line with those people. And he also depicts that through his artwork. I feel like art is a way of showing someone's feelings or what their memories are, because that's basically what art is.
Absolutely. I mean, art is definitely a way to process your feelings. I love how you tell a story about you finding something, a piece of art that you had from a long time ago, and you knew exactly that moment or that memory that was attached to when you drew that. And so I feel like art, music, so many things do that for us, help us cope. They help us process our feelings and they help us tell stories, right? The stories of our lives. Thank you for sharing that. Your art is beautiful, absolutely beautiful. So I know we're talking about mental health awareness, having a service member, a veteran that is experiencing some sort of mental health challenge. And for your family, normal is really the only normal that you know. And I'd love for you to talk about what that means.
Not knowing the different life before is, I guess for me, I try to imagine what would it be like if he didn't go to war? And like, what if he didn't sign up for the military? What would it be like in our house? Like, would it be a completely different setting? Would we be where we are now? Or would we have those like same memories? The memories that I have now are him knowing like that he's got PTSD and stuff. Don't say something that will trigger it. That's something you got to keep in mind. Don't say something that's going to trigger that flame. So when you're also thinking about, you're thinking, what if I didn't have to keep this in mind? Like, what would it be like if I just was thinking about what am I going to have for dinner? Or you think about that, but you're also still thinking about the other things that he has. But what if you didn't have to think about that at all? Because there's some people in Great Falls where we live in school, there's people who don't have dads that are in the military or parents or anybody in the military whatsoever. They'll try and talk about how, oh, my dad got mad at me, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, come on now. I know what being mad it looks like. I've seen it. Oh, I have to go sit in my room for 20 minutes? Dang. But it's like, come on now.
I've had those experiences.
So it gives you some perspective is what you're saying. It allows you to know that maybe some things that others think are really huge, monumental, bad things happening, you are able to kind of take a step back and know that those aren't as hard as maybe someone thinks they are because there's other things that can be harder. So I feel like it kind of gives you that perspective.
I know. That's what I was trying to get out of that whole entire spiel.
It's okay. You're getting there.
You know, what I would say too, though, is I work with families all the time. Lots of different families. And yes, as a military family, we have a unique set of circumstances that lead us through a certain type of experience. But there are plenty of families that have plenty of issues that they deal with. I am actually grateful that we have the setup in our family that we have. I like our family. I like it. Yes. Are there things that I would like to have different? Absolutely. But give me a family that does it. For me, this is our normal. And this is, like I said, would we change some of our normal things? Yes, but every family would probably change some of their normal things. I'm also grateful for the fact that, yes, he has PTSD, but he's not someone who's physical. You know?
Oh, yeah.
We don't have to deal with that. He gets very, very loud and he gets very, like I said, sometimes mean, but we don't have to worry about him being physical with us, right? Like, that's not one of our main fears here. We also, because he was retired medically, he is our stay-at-home dad. So different from what I had hoped. I'd want to be a stay-at-home mom and have, you know, my husband be working in the field, but that's just not what works for us. Thankfully, I already had my degree and I already had my license when we got married so that I was able to do that. And I was able to provide on top of what he, you know, gets obviously from like the VA and whatnot. But that's given us a lot of opportunities for our family to do things that we couldn't do otherwise. Him being able to take the kids out and do things, him being able to pick them up from school just to have a lunch date or, you know, attend a lot of their practices, their games. Lots of people don't get that. And even though we have the struggles that we have and we deal with the hardships that we have a lot of really great things that have come from having that be our experience. And so I like to try and focus more on those than those negative things. Again, those negative things are there. They don't rule our life. Sometimes they guide our life. I try to have our positive focus be more about here's where we want our family to go. And if we have things we want to change, let's work on changing them. But also knowing that we're okay. Like, we're okay. And I think that ultimately is more important than anything else.
Yeah, focusing on that positive and not the negatives, even though the negatives are there or the challenges are there, but looking at the things that are really great and that are maybe unexpected good things that came out of something that is obviously very traumatic. You know, for some people, it is a very difficult thing, right? Or for probably everyone, really difficult thing to kind of go through. And so I like that, focusing on those kind of positives. And it's the only normal that you know. You know, I personally am hesitant using the word normal because I feel like we use the word normal. And so what's the other side of that is abnormal, right? So I'm like, abnormal, normal, you know, how about we're all different and we've all got our own little idiosyncrasies and dealing with our own challenges and things like that, that are on a day-to-day basis. And so, I'm probably more on the abnormal side. I'm going to be honest. Well, I know we have talked about so much. You've shared your story and your experiences in your family, and I'm so thankful that you're able to talk with our listeners about that because I think this is a topic that can be very relatable for a lot of our military-connected families. McKenna, I'd love to know, do you have any advice for other military-connected children that may have an injured or wounded parent?
I guess my advice would be is kind of take it slow, because not every day is going to be the same. So you can't just predict, oh, I know exactly what's going to happen. When you have an injured military and you are connected, you don't really have a mental schedule. Like, your mind isn't on, okay, I need to get this and this and this. You got to think, okay, I need to get this without doing this. I need to do this without doing this. Just try and get every little moment you can take. It's not always going to last. It's not like they're going to be there for it.
When I think you've talked a lot in the past, too, about patience, right? Like, having patience with your injured parent as well as with yourself. You know, I know sometimes as the spouse, I have to have extra patience because I'm trying to hold pieces together and parts together, right? And sometimes I do that, I think, fairly well, and other times I don't do it well at all. And so it's just, it's also, I think, giving yourself grace for those moments when you lose it. Yeah, my husband, yeah, he has outbursts, but so do I. And I don't have PTSD in the same way that he has it to be able to say, yeah, this is my, again, we don't try to use excuse, but this isn't even a reason for my outburst, right? Like, this isn't even an explanation. It's just, sometimes we have a lot going on. And I think giving ourselves grace with the moments that we don't do well and forgiving ourselves for those moments, I think, is a very important piece in healing and moving forward. Because if you're constantly looking back at the mistakes that you made, where is the room for making improvement? You're too caught up in the past to be able to move forward. For me, I think that's one of those really important reasons why it's important to focus on the positive versus the negative. And that doesn't mean that we block out and pretend like the negative don't exist. That does the exact opposite of what we're trying to do. It's acknowledging that those negatives there, but then saying, I don't have to put any more energy towards them than what they already take from me. And saying, I want to put my energy somewhere where it's meaningful and positive and works for the betterment of all of us. And so I think that's really important and key in moving forward in a positive way.
And what about from a parent's perspective, Rachel, like, you know, for the kids, you know, do you have any advice for parents?
Well, obviously, you know, from our standpoint, it's primarily mental health that we focus on in our home. And there are some physical issues as well, but they're not nearly as everyday impactful as the PTSD and the other mental health struggles are. So from my perspective as a parent, as far as that goes, I think it's making sure, again, that you find those moments to connect with your children when the PTSD or whatever the other mental health struggle is, when that's not taking center stage, so that when it does, the kids have some foundation to lean upon. And then also making sure that they know, hey, this isn't about you. This is about what's going on in this area. Because it's hard to not take things personally, whether you're the parent or the kid. It's hard not to take things personally when they're directed towards you. And it's real easy to feel like everything's negative. I must not be a good child. There must be something wrong with me, or why this, why that. I think making sure that you're working at finding those positive moments to build your kids up outside of those kind of chaotic moments are going to be really, really essential in building a healthy foundation as a parent.
I think that's great advice. I love the grace, patience, finding those moments to connect. And I'm going to say too, finding your own opportunities to be able to kind of have self-care. Because I think sometimes we put that on the back burner as well, is those self-care moments or opportunities and whatever that looks like for you, right? It's going to look different for everybody. And so I think that's important to talk about as well. Again, I just want to say thank you so much for sharing your story. It's so important for us to talk about not just PTSD, but to talk about mental health, to talk about what it looks like in a family, and every family it's going to look different, and just kind of making it more acceptable for us to have the conversation, especially in our military community where we're so used to being tough and strong and all the things and not admitting when we maybe need help or support. And so I just want to say thank you again, because I appreciate it. Thank you, McKenna. And thank you, Rachel, because I think this was just really great for us to hear.
Thank you. I think it's good for us too, because oftentimes we don't think about these things. Like, we just go through life and we just kind of do it. So sometimes when you have these moments, we have to sit down and really think about it. You're like, oh yeah, this is kind of what we do. Oh yeah, this is how that works. kind of like you saying, oh yeah, I remember having to watch my dad sad and having to, you know, all those moments, like you don't even think about them, you just do them. And so I think having these moments are really helpful and healthy for us because it makes us stop and think for a few minutes instead of just trudging through. So we appreciate it too.
I'd like to thank Rachel and McKenna for their time today and for sharing their story. May is Mental Health Awareness Month and an opportunity for us to discuss a very important topic. Thanks for listening to the MSEC podcast, the official podcast of the Military Child Education Coalition. If you've enjoyed this episode, please like, share, subscribe, and give today's show a 5-star rating. And don't forget to leave us a comment on topics you'd like to hear more about. We'd like to give a special thanks again to the Military and Civilian Spouses Club of Fort Irwin for supporting this episode, and Consensus Media for audio mixing. I'm Nikki Harrison, and until next time, in a world where you can be anything, be kind.